Well, good afternoon again to everybody. I'm going to start out by asking you a question, and that is, have you ever been in a situation where you knew it would take a whole lot of faith? I'm talking a whole lot of faith in order to accomplish a task within your life or to get through a trial that you may be facing, especially one that you've never faced before, a new trial or a new situation. And if so, then what did you do? What did you do? What I mean by that is, did you move forward and face it, or did you choose to avoid it completely? What did you do? You know, due to our own personal journeys, we're going to learn spiritual lessons differently through life. Some things are going to be similar, but things are going to also be different. And we're all going to progress in our faith differently, but I believe there are a few general steps that all of us share, that all of us do along the way. So the title of my message today is Progression of Faith. Progression of Faith. I want to start out by sharing with you two brief stories that talk about using faith in situations where you find that you're not the most confident. And then we'll look at how the progression of our faith is so vital in including God within our lives. A few years back, my family went on a canoe trip. And we went out to Turkey Run State Park out in Indiana. And it was a Sunday, and it was a nice day. Diana and Kayla navigated one canoe, and Jake and I navigated the other canoe. And I believe Kayla was 12 years old at the time, and Jake was 10 years old, if I did my math correct. It was a trip that was full of interesting sights. There was a lot of adventure, and with any adventure, there's always a degree of challenges that will be faced along the way. And that's true with our trials as well. But right now, I'm talking about a canoe trip. That seems safe, right? Well, when we got there at 9:30 in the morning, the first thing we're asked to do is walk over to this big wooden wall that had life preservers everywhere. And our job was to find four life preservers that worked. And we spent a good half an hour looking at life preservers, trying to figure out which life jacket was rated for my weight, and which one had a strap left on it, and which one wasn't ripped. I mean, they were in terrible condition. So that was our first challenge. And then we're asked to go over and pay our money and then get on this overcrowded bus because it was going to take us to our next location where we would launch the canoes. Well, we soon learned as we're squished into this bus with no air conditioning that people start smoking and drinking at 9:30 in the morning, apparently, on the bus with little kids and everything around. And then we get to the launch pad, and there's a man there who's very enthused about his job, and he starts going over the safety rules for the trip. And it became clear that those rules only applied to my family. That's it. And then we get in the water, and we learn very quickly that Diana has a knack for not being able to steer a canoe straight. Now, her and I have had experience with canoes in our life, and it had been a while to give her a break. But my 12-year-old daughter, who'd been to summer camp once, I think, at this point, thought she was, you know, the navigating star of the world. And she's like, Mom, let's switch spots. I'm going to steer. Well, Kayla was really good at steering into branches and rocks and anything that was in the river, she could hit it. She was really good at that. So needless to say, they switched back, and Diana did a good job at past that point. But as you're going down this overcrowded river, there's inner tubes floating down the river with people. There are weekend enthusiasts that are lined up along the river, hundreds of people over this six-mile track. And with that, you get bad language, people yelling, things that my kids probably didn't hear up to that point. And you see people wearing bikinis that really shouldn't be wearing bikinis. You see all sorts of things on this family canoe trip that I wasn't planning on. We finally get to a point where we can pull over, and we decide we're going to eat lunch. And the first thing my son does is sits on this log with his feet in the water, pass me the bowl of fruit, and then the bowl of fruit goes down the river. So now we don't have any fruit because my son lost it. But the highlight for me of this trip was we got down, we're about 2 miles into it, and the river slowed down. And we're floating over here, and the girls were floating on this side. And in the center of the river were two grown men who I thought were just wrestling and having fun. But as we crept past them in slow motion, where we could touch our oar to them if we wanted to, we realized these men were completely intoxicated, and they're fighting over the last Coors Light beer that was floating in the water. And they were going at it. And they looked like a couple of grizzlies fighting over the last salmon. And you're sitting there trying to paddle faster, and you see your two girls across these fighting men. You're like, I can't do anything about this. I'm really sorry. So we eventually get down the river. We're safe at the other end, and I wanted to go get my money back, but we paid for a canoe trip. We paid for an adventure, and we got one. You know, everybody at that point had experience in a canoe except for Jacob. He had never been in one before. This was his very first time that he'd ever been in a canoe. And as I observed him from the planning stages of this trip all the way through the very end, it became obvious that this was a real act of faith for this 10-year-old boy to go on this trip. Let's go to Ruth chapter 1, and let's cut into another story. In Ruth chapter 1, and really the section of story that I want to cover is in the first 18 verses. We're not going to read those verses, but at least not all of them. The book of Ruth actually offers many spiritual lessons. It's actually packed full of lessons on love and devotion and loyalty, on finding favor with God. All, I'm sure, are qualities that we possess whenever we're going through a trial of faith, right? No? Maybe not? It's actually her progression within her faith early on in this story that I want to focus in on today. When you look at the story of Ruth in Naomi's move from Moab back to Bethlehem, it was full of challenges. Different challenges than I faced on the canoe trip, but there were challenges that they were going to have to face. Her father-in-law, Elimelech, and her mother-in-law, Naomi, and two sons had moved to Moab because of famine. They were in the land of promise, but instead of waiting for God's blessings, they decided that they were going to move to a less desirable place. This was a land, Moab was a land of rebellion. It was full of pagan culture. It was full of immorality. It was a place where people literally did what was right in their own eyes. And that was common behavior during the time, because it was during the time of judges. There were no kings around to rule over them. There were no prophets walking the land. So people were, in a sense, on their own. And while they were there, the two sons both married Moabite women, Orpah and Ruth. And we're not told how, but Naomi's husband dies, and then later on, her two sons also die. And so now these three women were left as widows. But Naomi learned that the famine was over in her homeland, and she wanted to move back. And she packed up her things, and she started out with her two daughter-in-laws. But then along the way, in verse 7, let's read what happens when she turns to the two girls. Therefore, she went out from the place where she was and her two daughter-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and they wept. Now, we can't really fault Naomi for wanting to go back to her homeland and be with her relatives. That completely makes sense. She was now a widow. and her daughters were widows. And if you've lost a loved one, you understand that it's hard to live alone. And she was a woman who was taking charge. She was making decisions. Good for her. Good for her. And she was encouraging her daughter-in-laws to both go back to Moab. Stay with your family. Stay with your own people. Find new husbands that are going to provide for you so that you have security and you're taken care of. It's not really bad advice. But then at the end of verse 9, as we read, it becomes obvious that this was a very hard situation. And these women, they loved each other dearly and very deeply. And Naomi kissed them and said goodbye. And after some persuasion, Orpah decided to go back. And I don't look at that as a knock on her character at all. She just wasn't willing to take a risk. She went back to her home, her family, her bank, her grocery store, the things that were familiar to her, and that's where she was comfortable. But Ruth didn't do that. Why didn't Ruth do that? Why didn't she go? Well, let's read start in verse 15, because it really gives us some good insight into Ruth's decision to not go back, but instead follow Naomi. And you start to see this was more than just a friendship that allowed her to make this decision. And she said, "Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." And then here's Ruth's famous quote. I mean, this is what she's famous for mostly, is these next two verses. And we'll just read verse 16. But Ruth answers and says, "Entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God." Ruth found faith to take a risk. You know, not everybody acts on their faith. Some people just sit on it. They just sit on their faith. Some people actually grow to understand what it means to be faithful, but then never use their faith in their life to grow or to overcome. Taking a risk is not always the easiest thing to do, whether it's moving to a new area, whether it's getting married or starting a new job, or a 10-year-old boy is going to go down a river in a canoe for the first time. I'm sure you could come up with your own examples within your life. Brethren, sometimes taking a risk with God is the only way out of the trial. Faith is a process. It's a progression of steps that lead us to act on our belief of what we cannot see. It is being able to surrender yourself to God and trust that He's going to provide an answer for us. Ruth was beginning to understand that there were things that she could put her trust in that were going to fuel her faith in her life. So let's look at this progression of faith and specifically look at three basic steps that I think all of us partake in our own journeys. The first step in this progression is that we have to realize that faith is a choice. It's a choice. And God has given us all, right or wrong, the ability to choose. And with that ability comes a certain level of risk. Why is there risk? Well, because we don't always choose correctly, do we? We don't always choose the right answer. We don't always choose the correct door. And God shows us through many examples in His Word that we should be risk takers and that there are rewards for doing so. The parable of the talents is a really good example of doing that. However, the choices, the risk that we do take and that we do make should be done with godly wisdom, shouldn't they? They shouldn't be done on just this impulsive whim. They shouldn't be done because of a poor planned emotional decision, because we're all riled up, so let's make a decision. You know, emotions are going to influence our lives. There's no question about that. God gave us emotions, but they shouldn't rule our decisions. They shouldn't rule or control us. Believing that God is the true God, believing the Bible is that inspired word of God, believing that God is going to hold true to what He says, He's going to hold true to His word, Those are all choices that we have to make. And those all affect our spiritual faith. And in order to prove all things, as we're encouraged to do, there are going to be many questions that we're going to need to have answered along the way. My son's choice was that he had to overcome a certain degree of fear and go on a trip down a river. He wasn't very, adventurous as a young boy. So this was a big deal for him. But he had to make a decision to go down a river that he'd never even seen before. What does that mean? What did he envision that to be like? What went through his mind? Was it a calm river? Was it wide? Was it a raging river? Were there, piranhas in the river? I mean, who knows what went through his head? Ruth also made a choice to go with Naomi to a strange land that she had never seen before. How did she envision that? As lonely or hard or scary? Was it a diseased land? Were there giants? What went through her mind? For us, if we're experiencing a trial that we've never, ever seen before, or we've never experienced before, how are we envisioning that? Do we look at it as being impossible, or unnecessary, or frightening, or unfair? How do we view that? What did Jake see that allowed him to feel that this was a risk that was worth taking? What did he see? He made a choice to go on this canoe trip even though he wasn't too sure about it. He wasn't even sure what he was getting himself into. But before he said yes, he had a whole lot of questions that he wanted answered. And we called a family meeting because that's what we always did with the kids. Usually they were in trouble when we had a family meeting, but sometimes it was just to plan things out. And he had some good questions. He asked, how fast is this river? And are there any waterfalls? That's a good question. Do I have to wear a life jacket? Because that's not cool. Don't want to look like a putz. Will I have to drive the canoe myself? At 10, that's a good question. Will there be time for lunch? I thought that was his best question. But my favorite question was this. Dad, if my canoe tips over, how am I going to get out of my seatbelt? It's an innocent question. He thought that he'd have to wear a seatbelt. He was asking Mom and Dad to reassure him. And why was he doing that? Because he trusted us. He believed we would have the answers that he was looking for so that he could make the best decision. He could decide, is this something that I can do? Is this something that I want to do? What did Ruth see that allowed her to feel that this was a risk worth taking in her life? Well, I believe that in her situation, she saw something in Naomi's life that made her take a risk. I think she saw something in Naomi's faith and how she worshiped her God compared to how the Moabite women worshiped their God. And she could see a difference. Ruth liked what she saw in Naomi. And through Ruth, she was able to see, or through Naomi, Ruth was able to see true faith in action. Neither Naomi or Ruth were sitting on their faith. Both of them were putting their faith to work differently because they had different levels of faith at that time, but they were putting their faith to work. And one example of that type of action within Naomi is how she responded to the death of her husband and her two sons. I know in the story, if we were read the whole story of Ruth, it refers to her as being pleasant and then going back as being bitter. But bitterness never overcame her. She was just being real about her life. And she was just sharing her circumstances. But she didn't let those feelings turn into hatred. She didn't stop herself from growing within her faith. Again, we don't know the circumstances surrounding their death, so there may have been an opportunity to have those types of feelings. But one thing I do know is that she decided instead to trust God with her future And that's what she did. Ruth was being called by God through the example of faith that was set by Naomi. I believe that's how God was calling her, through that example of faith. Brethren, faith is a choice to take God at his word and then act accordingly. Faith is a choice to take God at his word and then act accordingly. We are to believe in things that we can't see, but we're also asked to believe in the things of the evidence of the things that we can see. And that was how and that was why Ruth could make the choice to follow Naomi to a new land. Again, we need to prove all things, and Ruth was able to prove that God was true. And she then chose to follow Naomi. But she proved to God that I'm willing to follow you by following Naomi through her action. God saw what she was doing. He saw her progressing through her faith. I'm sure God was very pleased with Ruth at that time. You know, one danger is that people can get into is that they confuse a choice with a feeling. But faith, brethren, it's not a feeling. It's a choice. You know, we can get up one morning and say, oh, I don't feel like going to work. But then what do we choose to do? We usually choose to go to work anyhow, don't we? Christ always gave people a choice. It was one of the things, it just seems like every single time, Christ always gave people a choice. Let's go to Matthew 16, verse 24. If you got a little ribbon in your Bible, you might want to hold your place in Ruth, but let's go to Matthew 16, verse 24. And let's look at one of these situations where Christ gave a choice. Matthew 16, verse 24, it's a new language. It says, if anyone desires to come after me, so there's the choice, the word if. He started a lot of things out with the word if, when you start to read all the red letters in your Bible. So he's saying, you can choose to come with me or you can choose not to. But if you're going to, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. You're going to find that Christ always gives us an if. Because to follow him, brethren, it's not a feeling. It's a choice. We have to choose to do that. And I bet you could think of at least one time within your life where you experienced this step in your life. You experienced this step in your faith where you had to make a choice to follow God by having to make a choice to take a risk. And usually it was to follow God's way instead of your own way. In your own will is most the most common one that I can think of that we probably all share, because it's so natural to want to just do what you think is right to fix a situation. And sometimes it takes a lot of faith to choose and say, you know what, God's way is a little harder at this time, but it's the right thing to do. Let's go on to point number two. After you make a choice, you then have to make a commitment. Jacob made the choice to make a commitment to go on that canoe trip. And even though he knew there was a chance that he was going to swamp the canoe, and he was afraid because he had never experienced that before, he realized that I had experienced that before. I have a lot of canoe experience, and I have swamped a lot of canoes on purpose and not on purpose, in treacherous waters and calm waters. But he knew that. He knew that that was the case, and that allowed him to be able to have faith in me. The same is true with God. We may get swamped in our life for the very first time. We may go through a trial that we just can't figure it out. We've never faced it before, but we should be able to attack it, brethren, in the confidence of knowing that God has the experience to guide us through any situation that this life is going to throw at us. God's word can fix and address anything that we're ever going to encounter from birth to death. He designed it that way. Seldom do we commit ourselves to people. Seldom do we commit ourselves to causes that we don't believe in. We commit ourselves to things that we trust, that we can trust in, and then that commitment should then lead our actions from that point forward. When Ruth made the choice to follow Naomi, she also made a commitment. But her commitment wasn't just to her mother-in-law. It was also to a new land. It was to a new God. She was letting go of her family ties, her home, to follow God and be a foreigner in a strange land. And she ran a great risk of being rejected. And honestly, none of us like to be rejected in life. It's a terrible feeling. The commitment that she made to Naomi is very similar to the commitment that you see in marriage or in baptism. Verse 17, let's go back to Ruth chapter 1. I told you that verses 16 and 17 were her famous verses. I only read verse 16. But let me continue on in verse 17. This is her giving her reasons why she doesn't want to leave Naomi and she wants to go. She says, "Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts you and me." You know, I read that, and I get this sense of unconditional love. I mean, that I can feel that in that verse. And here's someone new in her faith, and she's already dabbling in unconditional love. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, we probably still struggle with that at times in our lives. This isn't a commitment that's taken lightly. It's a commitment to something that has been proven to be trustworthy through action. Have you really ever considered all the things in these little two verses right here that Ruth was actually committing to? It wasn't just to Naomi. I mean, she committed to a lot of things in just two verses. You may be surprised at the level of her commitment, but also in the number of things that she was committed to. I'm not going to do it justice, but let me mention a few of them that you may have not picked up. Ruth was committed to Naomi's confidence in knowing what direction to take. You know, she's basically saying, "Don't make me leave you or stop me from following you. I trust your direction. Your God shall be my God." She was able to commit herself to Naomi's faith because she had set a very good example for her. Let's go to 2 Timothy 1 because that ties into... Shoot on over to 2 Timothy 1 real quick. In verse 5, here we are seeing Ruth so attached to Naomi's example of confidence and faith. And then here in 2 Timothy 1 verse 5, I'm in 1 Timothy, so... Paul's saying, "When I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you," he's talking to Timothy, "which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and then your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded it is in you also." Ladies, if you think that your example isn't huge with your children or your grandchildren or your nieces or nephews or anybody else, please don't take that lightly. It was a huge thing for Ruth, and it was a huge thing for Timothy. Ruth was also committed to Naomi's belief of where to go. "Wherever you're heading, I want to go there," she says. Well, you know what? If you're still in 2 Timothy, I'm not, but let's go back there because that ties into 2 Timothy 3 somewhere. Where does that tie in? Verse 14. "But as for you, continue in the things which you have learned and been assured of, knowing from whom you have learned them." So here we have Naomi's belief of where she needs to go. Why is she going back? Because that's where she learned about God. That's where she learned to behave as a Christian. That's where her identity was formed. She's going back to where she's going to be spiritually safe. And Ruth could see that in her. It's amazing. Ruth also committed herself to a new life in a new land. "Wherever you lie your head and call home," she's saying, "that's where I want to be as well." She's willing to leave her world behind. You know, are we willing to leave the things of this world behind? That's supposed to be an easy question, but you know, it's not that easy of a question when you're alone in a room by yourself. Ruth was committing herself to Naomi's family. She said, "Your people shall be my people." She was committing herself to Naomi and her as a loving leader within her life. There are lots of examples in the story where later on Naomi gives Ruth lots of good advice in different situations. And I'm sure that she was used to that from her previous life before the travel, when she was married to one of her sons. I'm sure that was an attribute that Naomi had, was to offer good, sound advice to her children. Ruth commits to a completely new lifestyle. Could you do that? She's going to conform to a new culture, a new God, a new way of worshiping things. Those are all drastic changes. Those would rock our world. She's committing to a new lineage. She's going to turn her back on the ways of Moab. She's going to turn her back on her roots, on the things that made her who she is. She was committing to a new identity. I don't know if you've ever moved to a new area where you've never lived. Sometimes you can lose your identity. It's a big deal for some people. You have to reestablish yourself. Who am I now that this is gone and this is different? She's committing to a new God, and I think this could be the biggest statement that she makes in her life. I think it is probably the biggest statement of the story of Ruth, is her commitment to a new God. She's completely shifting her source of faith to a new God. It's new to her anyhow, right? He's new to her. Her commitment shows no boundaries. She says, "Where you die, I will die." She's committing herself to this new way of life for as long as she lives, is basically what she's saying. And then at the very end, she even goes on to say that she's willing to have a curse put upon her if she doesn't follow through with this commitment. Wow, she's serious. Brethren, you can't get to this level of commitment based on just emotion. It takes conviction. Now, I've referenced Hebrews 11:1 a couple times. It describes faith. Hebrews 11:1 says, "Now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see." Do you remember when the disciples were in the boat at night and Jesus was walking on the water? And Peter asked if he could come out to where Christ was. It's a familiar story. And what did Christ say? He said, "Get out of the boat and come on out." Brethren, faith is getting out of the boat. Absolutely. And if you want to walk on water, you have to get out of the boat. I know you may be thinking, but you know what? There's less risk in the boat. It's safer just to be sitting in the boat. It's more comfortable, isn't it? There's no risk involved with that. And that's all true, but Christ isn't in the boat. He's in the water. And basing our faith on little trust or on emotions that Satan likes to use against us, like fear and doubt, he would love to get fear and doubt as the two biggest things that we base our faith on. Because what we're going to do is we're going to huddle ourselves down in the bottom of that boat. And we might even convince ourselves that boat's going in the right direction. But it's not. There's no action within our faith when we're sitting in the boat. We're doing nothing. We understand what faith is, but we're not using it to our advantage at all. The risk is to take on the adventure outside of the boat. Because, brethren, that's what takes faith. Absolutely. And my son probably doesn't understand that philosophy because most of the trip I told him to stay in the boat. And there's good reason for that. You know, even though the water is dark and it may be dangerous, Christ is looking for people who will take a risk. What I mean by that are people who will act on their faith. That's what I mean when I say take a risk. People who act on their faith. Peter did because he trusted Christ. Jake did because he trusted his parents, and Ruth trusted Naomi, and Naomi trusted God. If you look back at the times where you felt your faith grew, it was most likely during a time where God was asking you to get out of the boat and take on something that you were completely uncomfortable with. God's power in our life will not be revealed to us if we're huddling in the bottom of the boat. Remember, if you want Christ to lead you, if you want him to guide you, you have to be where Christ is. That makes sense. And that sometimes is where you're not the most comfortable being. But his commitment to us is that he is always near to us. He's always available to us. And when our fears cause us to sink in life, it is the fact that Christ is always there to pick us up that makes him so trustworthy. And that trust will allow us to act on faith and not to just sit on it. Let's go to the third point. And that is, once we have made the choice and the commitment, then we will find that our faith will take us on a journey. So point number three is simply, go on that journey. Go on the journey. It may only be taking you down a short adventure like a six-mile canoe trip. It might be taking you down an adventure like Ruth went on. You know, from the time that she decided to follow to the end of the book, it was 12 years. So her journey was a little longer than a half a day. When it comes to our trials in life, whatever journey we might be on, it's likely that we have no idea how long that journey is going to be. But that's not the point. If we have made the choice to act on faith, by committing ourselves to that which is trustworthy, then we can be confident in God's guidance throughout the length of that adventure, no matter how long it is. You know, there were several instances when I was sitting in the back of the canoe, and I was calm, and you might not believe that, but looking at the beautiful scenery that was above the wackles on the shoreline. And all of a sudden, I'm looking up, enjoying a bird, and the canoe just goes flips and flops and just violently shoots left and right, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. And I looked up ahead, and there's Jake leaning halfway out of the canoe, reaching his arm in the bottom of the river trying to scoop up rocks. Without warning, without telling me what's going to... Now, understanding there's some counterbalancing things that need to take place here. And I thought to myself, why is this kid who is so unsure about this canoe trip so confident that he can just now lean halfway out of a canoe and not be afraid to be swept down the river? Well, it was because I was sitting behind him. That's why. He had complete faith in his dad. And it allowed him to really enjoy the adventure with confidence. It kind of reminds me of that scripture. It says we're supposed to find all joy in our trials. Well, he was finding joy in his trial. Ruth made the choice and the commitment to follow Naomi because she knew she was trustworthy. And she followed a God that she had complete trust in. And her faith led her through any uncertainty that she had. Her journey wasn't an easy one. You know, Ruth worked as a slave girl, even though she wasn't a hired servant. But God provided her food. God provided for her. She found favor in his eyes. She's even referred to as being a virtuous woman that other people around her noticed that about her. He led her to Boaz. You know, in the first chapter of Matthew, you can read how Boaz and Ruth were privileged to be in the very bloodline of David, who is in the bloodline of Jesus Christ. I believe Ruth might have been David's grandmother or great-grandmother. I don't remember which one. But you know, as I read through the genealogy in Matthew 1, I noticed that there were only four women that were mentioned by name. And that might not be a big deal, and I could be making this up, but to me, that seems to be a way that maybe God was honoring Ruth for her faith. Just a little something to mention her in that way. You know, God saw her willingness to take a risk, and she was greatly rewarded for her faith. And God's ability to care for her. Brethren, how much faith does it take to cause God to guide you in your life? Let's work towards a conclusion here. How much faith do you think it takes to cause God to guide you in your life? Naomi and Ruth had different levels of faith. Is that how God envisioned it? Did he see two different levels, or did he just see faith? I don't know. But let's go to Matthew 17 and verse 20. Matthew chapter 17, verse 20. And we'll cut into this a little bit here. It says, if you have the faith as a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. And nothing will be impossible for you. Now, I don't believe that any of us are really going to move Mount Everest in this lifetime. But the lesson is that no matter how big or how small our faith is, through the very power of God, we could move Mount Everest in this lifetime. We could. Christ is telling us that even as, just as a little faith can make a huge difference within our life, is basically the point he's trying to make. Even a little faith. Just as a small mustard seed has a lot of potential, so do we. Christ says, don't despair because of your smallness. Many great things have small beginnings. In all that life brings our way, we need to have the faith to trust God. You know, Ruth's faith wasn't that big in the beginning. It grew, and it grew, and God accomplished quite a bit through her life. But no matter the size of our faith, the lesson, especially from Ruth's story, is that in order to have faith, we need to follow something. What do we have faith in? If we have faith, we have to be following something. A Christian who is not committed in their faith will follow Christ when it's easy, or when it's convenient, or when it's comfortable, and it doesn't take a lot of effort, or when it doesn't cost anything in their lives. There's no sacrifice that they have to make. They're the best Christian around, and they have just a little bit of faith. But a Christian with a proper faith will be empowered by God's Holy Spirit. I mean, you can read that in Acts chapter 1, verse 8. That's what happened in that verse. Those men became empowered by God's Spirit. They will be convicted within their calling. A person with proper faith won't be so tied to this world that they can't follow Christ. You know, Ruth wasn't so tied to Moab that she couldn't make that decision to take that risk. The lesson for us is don't get so conformed to this world that you can't leave it to follow Christ. Because when he asks us to follow him, he understands that it won't be convenient for us. He understands that our lives will change. He understands that we're going to open ourselves up to more spiritual battles to face and to learn and to overcome from. When Jesus called Matthew, and we read a verse where he gave Matthew a choice, but when he called Matthew and asked him to follow him, he didn't give Matthew a brochure, did he? He didn't give him an itinerary for the next 3 years. Matthew had no idea what was going on. He was kind of in the dark. He was unsure of what was going to happen. But he had to quit his job, he had to leave his home, he had to leave his family, he had to follow Christ wherever Christ was going to lead him. And just as Ruth did, Matthew took a risk. It wasn't going to be the safe road. He didn't know that Christ would be arrested. He didn't know that he'd be killed because of his faith. He didn't know that there'd be thousands and thousands of people that would learn and build a relationship with God because of his example. He didn't know any of that. Are the things that you have committed yourself to follow, are those things that are going to add to your faith? Or are they things that are going to take away from your faith? What are you following? Because again, if you have faith in something, you're following something. Make sure your faith is based on things that are proven to be trustworthy. Jake's faith was, so was Ruth's, so was Naomi's. Don't let Satan convince you to stay in the boat. Get out. Walk the adventure with Christ.